This is Jim Engster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana today. We'll start with State Senator John Milkovich, Democrat from Shreveport, albeit a very conservative Democrat. He'll comment on his bill, which was signed into law by Governor John Bel Edwards to restrict abortion access after 15 weeks of pregnancy. And Senator Milkovich will also analyze what happens with the prospect of a more conservative U.S. Supreme Court in the offing. Does this mean the death of Roe v. Wade? Also, financial analysts Fred Denn and Andy Anderson on the impact of the exploding debt on the stock market and the results of a trade war that is now ongoing with China on the Louisiana and national economy. We'll get Andy and Fred to comment on where the market is now, a year and a half into the Trump presidency. The president today meeting in Russia with, or meeting in Helsinki with Russian leader Vladimir Putin. Now the news on WRKF. This is Jim Engster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Hope you had a great weekend, and we begin with one of the most outspoken and eloquent members of the Louisiana legislature, the attorney John Milkovich from Shreveport, who is a Democrat who represents District 38, elected to the upper chamber of the Louisiana legislature in 2015, and he's here to talk about some matters that go beyond the fiscal cliff and all that good stuff that we talked about for several months. But John Milkovich was front and center. He was the sponsor of a bill during the recently completed regular session that disallows access to women seeking abortions after 15 weeks of pregnancy. And it was signed by Governor John Bel Edwards enthusiastically, passed overwhelmingly in the Louisiana legislature. And John Milkovich, I'm sure you're quite enthused that this bill not only stayed the course, but got to the finish line and was embraced by the governor.
Well, yes. And by the way, I'm going to tell your listening audience what I tell you privately. You are a consummate professional, Jim, at what you do. You're so spirit of excellence, your diligence, your poise, your diplomacy, the way you handle yourself. You're a professional, and it's always a pleasure to speak with you.
Well, thank you. Well, about your bill. This was a significant development.
Well, it was a great breakthrough, and of course, people have been very kind to me. But honestly, sometimes I think I had as little to do with it as anyone. I did have the honor and privilege of sponsoring it, but it's the product of many pro-life legislators. We have a history of strong pro-life legislators in Louisiana: the late Mike Cross, Woody Jenkins, Johnny Labruzzo, Sharon Broom, the list goes on and on. I'm leaving out scores of people. And also, the credit goes to the hundreds of thousands of people around Louisiana that pray to stop abortion, our good, strong faith Christian community, our pastors. And also, I commend Governor John Bel Edwards. He has been signing every piece of anti-abortion legislation that we as legislators to get to him. And finally, let's give the legislature some credit. Yes, the Louisiana legislature has one of the strongest pro-life records of any legislature in the United States of America.
All right. 877-217-5757 is your number. Locally, 297-5633 in Baton Rouge. You can reach us at talk@talklouisiana.org. John Milkovich, the senator from Shreveport, is with us for a little while, and he, of course, is a man who's never shied from controversy. I've known him for more than 30 years, and he has always gone full bore into any controversy that he feels is necessary to be discussed and addressed, and he's done this with abortion. Now we're facing the prospect of a more conservative U.S. Supreme Court and the possibility that Roe v. Wade will be overturned. What will that mean for Louisiana if that happens?
Hey, it's a great day for America. It's a great day for unborn babies. One of my colleagues in the Senate, Senator Ryan Gatty, a good close personal friend, he said, look, the way God designed it, the womb was supposed to be the safest place for a baby. But in America, since Roe v. Wade, the last, 40 years plus, the womb is one of the unsafest places for a baby to be. So, this is a great breakthrough, not just for Louisiana, but for America. In Louisiana, we want to do our part. We think there's a great chance of the Supreme Court striking Roe v. Wade. We want to have statutes in place on the books, make sure our books are in order so that when Roe v. Wade gets overturned, that we're in a position to say, look, we're we're putting the abortion clinics out of the baby killing business in Louisiana. We're gonna stop infanticide in our state. That's a, you know, it's a great dream for many thousands of Louisianians.
All right, 877-217-5757, and talk at talklouisiana.org. A couple of questions already online. One from Holly in the Garden District, presenting the same question to you that Chris Matthews presented to President Trump when he was a candidate. Should women be punished if they have abortions?
Well, I mean, I think the focus isn't on punishment. I think our primary focus is on saving the lives of the unborn babies. You know, I personally feel that there's an accountability, a moral accountability, and I think somehow we've got a cultural disconnect where women, some women, are thinking babies is simply another part of their body. You know, a baby isn't an ankle bone. A baby isn't, a shin bone. A baby's not a fingernail. A baby is human life. It's a frail, small, and vulnerable, defenseless, weak, but they are humans. And, you know, I think we've maybe become culturally desensitized, Jim, so that we, to the point that we're not seeing abortion as murder. You know, and I guess I'm from Montana. I live in Keithville. I just guess I'm just simple enough to think.
I want to get to some of the other questions. And by
the way,
if you'd like to call in, 877-217-5757, Becca Dill is producing. That's the voice you'll hear when you call in. And we're visiting with the Honorable John Milkovich, Democrat from Shreveport District 38, who, as you can hear, is a very conservative lawmaker when it comes to abortion and other social issues. Now, John Milkovich, a question, a good one from Tracy at the Capitol. Now they're is a way to medically induce an abortion without going to a clinic. Are you going to, if Roe v. Wade is overturned, are you going to try to prohibit that?
I'm against killing babies. You know, if we take a biblical view, and I believe the Bible is true, it says that, you know, before I formed in the womb, God knew us. He formed us. He understood our course and our future and understand our persona even before we were fully formed. If you take that view, which is God's view, not John's view, it's God's view set out in the Bible very clearly. If you take that view, human life is life and sacred and worthy of legal protection from the moment of conception. So the short answer is I'm against killing babies.
All right, Corey on Brightside. Corey, you're on with John Milkovich. Senator Milkovich is ready for your question, Corey.
Yeah, good morning, Mr. Engstern, Senator. My question has been, without making a comment, for the Senator about killing babies and all these language he's using. My question is, Mr. Engstern, what is he doing to the born babies where the poverty rate is the highest, where the woodland, just what is he doing to the born babies with the preschooling, and et cetera, et cetera?
All right. What about
anti-abortion
people when it comes to babies who are out there? They're not all that enthused about the government helping once those kids are born. What about that?
Well, I think we never get to the point where we say, well, a baby may be mistreated, therefore we're going to kill it, okay? So if we're against mistreating babies, we better be against killing them. If we're against some evil against babies, we ought to be against the ultimate evil, the babies. That's number one.
All right. We're going to try to get to as many of you as possible. 877-217-5757. Gaston on Highland Road. Gaston, you're on with Senator Milkovich.
Well, thanks for having my call, Jim. Mr. Senator, you're quite passionate, and I appreciate that. What about educating these babies? You know, we've got a problem educating our children. We're giving tops to wealthy people, but we're holding back a whole generation. And some of these young people that are having babies, I'm not advocating abortion, but what I'm saying is we need to educate our young people.
All right, what about that,
Senator? Hey, listen, it's a great question. Listen, I've been fighting Common Core. I've been fighting the Department of Education bureaucratic reforms, the nonstop bureaucracy, the red tape on teachers, the big government top-down educational model that we're getting to with Common Core. Yes, absolutely, our children need to be educated. But I think we need to get back to our basic values in educating our children. I think that we've gotten away from discipline, respect, and values. Our schools have gotten dangerous. We have a problem with bullying. And the Common Core education model is basically takes American education, takes out patriotism, takes out Christianity, takes out the Bible, takes out moral values, takes out moral absolutes, and says, okay, this is what we have left. That's
all right. Another question, and a very good one. Most of the Louisiana legislature, most of the U.S. Supreme Court, most of the federal Congress is comprised of men. Do men have any right, John Milkovich, to weigh in on an issue that they'll never have to face themselves, whether or not to have an abortion?
You know, the very posing of that question, I think, potentially directs us to, you know, our fault line in our current culture. Where did we ever get to the place where we believe that women are the enemies of their babies? I mean, you don't even see that in you know, the animal kingdom. It's God places, I believe, in men and women an affection and a desire to protect our youth. And that bond is nowhere stronger than in the bond between a mother and a child. And for centuries, that has been our touchstone of morality in America. And it's just over the last 40 years that we've gotten away from that.
877-217-5757 is the 45-year-old Roe v. Wade decision about to be overturned by a new Supreme Court if Brett Kavanaugh is confirmed as the ninth justice. We'll talk more with John Milkovich, and we're back after this brief pause on WRKF. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Our guest for another segment is State Senator John Milkovich, Democrat, District 38 from Shreveport. Juanita in North Baton Rouge. Juanita, you're on the air with Senator Milkovich. Hi, Juanita.
Good morning.
Yes, Juanita.
I was just calling in to say that I've always felt that in the case of a woman's health being threatened or I guess her life being threatened, or the case of rape, something that's out of the woman's control, abortion should be okay. But getting pregnant is completely within a woman's control in all other instances. So women should take responsibility for getting themselves in a situation instead of trying to get themselves out.
But you're in favor, Juanita, of a rape and incest exception?
Yes, definitely.
All right, John Milkovich. Thank you, Juanita. Senator, would you be inclined to, if Roe v. Wade is overturned, to make an allowance if a person is raped or is a victim of incest?
No, because you're killing the baby. And, you know, you're compounding the initial wrong. Killing the baby doesn't obviate or take away the injustice that was done or the wrong that was done with the rape or the incest. It's committing a second crime, and it's taken away a life. The baby is the victim. I will say that I really appreciate Juanita's point about the protecting the health of women. The abortion clinic in Baton Rouge in particular is horrendous. Julie Baxter did a series on it years ago.
Yeah, well, that was more than 20 years ago, though. I don't know what it's doing now, but that was 1994.
And that's a long time ago. But the information that I have from the people on the ground in Baton Rouge that have been in the trenches fighting abortion, for one of them, Mike Bourgeois, over 15 years, Richard Mahoney, I believe, over 25 years, they say that, look, these are... The conditions of these places are horrendous.
Chris at LSU, you're on with Democratic State Senator John Milkovich. Good morning, Chris. Chris at LSU.
Hi.
Yes, sir.
Hi. I have a question that I've always wanted to ask someone of your point of view. All of your defenses for why abortion should be banned are religious-based, and there's no actual law on the books that states this as murder. So are you... What is your defense for doing this that is not founded in your belief religiously that it is an act of murder? Because by the law, it is not an act of murder.
All right. The point made from Chris is certainly one that has been made and was made when Roe v. Wade was voted the law of the land on a 7-2 vote by the U.S. Supreme Court in 1973. Your response?
Well, sure, and actually, abortion has been statutorily outlawed and essentially been declared murder by Louisiana and by legislatures all across America. Abortion is considered a crime in many nations across the world. In fact, the unfortunate reality is that the United States is one of the leaders in the world in per capita abortions. So our cavalier, callous, casual viewpoint towards abortion is not shared across the world.
All right, uniformly. Well, Senator, okay. If abortion is suddenly outlawed in Louisiana, maybe across the country, I think you know abortions are not going to stop, that people will still get them. If that happens, is it better to have some sort of government activity where at least the clinics are overseen by the government rather than having the so-called back alley abortions?
Well, Jim, you know, that's very curious that you bring that up. The intel that I'm getting on the ground in Baton Rouge, for example, is that the abortion clinic in Baton Rouge is very unsafe, many complications, women having to have post-abortion surgeries to correct the damage that was done to them by the abortion.
David in Atlanta. Hi, David. You're on with Senator Milkovich.
I'd like to know from the Senator, how do you feel about the fact 80,000 women worldwide die every year because they live in a country where abortion is illegal? And if your daughter came to you and said, I wasn't as careful as I should have been on my prom night, I found out today I'm pregnant, there's no way I'm having this child, I'm going to college with my friends in the fall, would you pay for her to leave the country and have a clinical abortion or turn your back on your flesh and blood and see her go to a back alley butcher only to die from a hemorrhage?
Senator Milkovich, your response today?
My daughter off to have a baby aborted. Absolutely not. I hope that, you know, we've given her sufficient moral background and backbone that if she was ever in that position that she would want to protect the life of her baby. I can tell you that I would. And I would also tell you that, you know, you're talking about 80,000 women. That's a tragedy. The larger tragedy is that since Roe v. Wade made it illegal for states to outright ban abortions, 60 million babies have been killed. Now, that's genocide.
Now, Richard Upton writes, if abortion is outlawed, will Senator Milkovich institute sex education in schools and make contraceptives free and readily available? Is that a good idea, Senator Milkovich?
I'm getting all these friendly questions this morning, Jim. But absolutely no. And this is what I've been saying in Senate Education Committee hearings for the last 2.5 years. You know, how about we get back to discipline, respect, and values? How about we get back to valuing the principles and ordinances and direction and guidance that we get from God, from the Ten Commandments, from our Christian values? You know, we've done this experiment in moral relativism and taking Bible values and banishing the Ten Commandments. We've been doing that for 30 or 40 years. Folks, you know, you need to be sitting in the Senate Ed Committee where we're talking about issues about the unsafety of our schools. Louisiana schools have ranked last 51st, and I know there's only 50 states. Our schools are ranked 51st in safety in the United States of America.
All right. Well, let's try to get a few of you in before we hit the finish line with Senator Milkovich. Dan downtown. Hi, Dan. You're on the air with the senator.
Hi. Yeah, Senator Rock. Are the babies sacred enough for you to risk the wrath of your right-wing anti-tax constituents to vote for the taxes needed to pay for their education and health care, as well as the cost of prosecution and incarceration of physicians who give them and the women who have abortions?
All right. What about...
I think his question is if I'm against abortion, I should be for high taxes. Number one, I don't think it's simply the government's responsibility to take care of children. Guess what? I think that's maybe where we're going wrong. I think it's the family's responsibility. I believe the church needs to step up. I believe that we as adult citizens and leaders spend time with kids, get directly involved in the lives of our kids, coaching, teaching, supporting charities that clothe and feed kids that live in one single parent or have no parents. I believe it's the responsibility of all of us, not simply the government. And I also believe that, you know, when we change the emphasis from God to government, from family to social programs, from work to, you know, government programs, we're actually weakening the foundation of the future hope of these children. Which
all right, Patrick on Bluebonnet. Hi, Patrick. You're on the air with Senator Milkovich.
Yeah, I mean, I understand a woman's right to her body. We get that. But that doesn't give somebody the right to commit murder, whether it's a doctor or somebody in a back alley. They don't have the right to kill a baby.
All right. What about Brett Kavanaugh, nominee to the Supreme Court?
Before we switch to Brett Kavanaugh, I thank that last caller. Thank you for saying that. And you said it very succinctly and better than I did. Listen, Jim, I think the most significant ramifications of Judge Kavanaugh's appointment to the Supreme Court, should he be confirmed, is, you know, number one, the abortion issue, which we've been talking about. And the other issue, I think, is the presidency, President Trump. There is a very concerted attack on President Trump to take him out legally through Robert Mueller. And, you know, I feel that, you know, we all know the debate. We all know that there's been very strong criticism of President Trump in the mainstream media. But, you know, I guess I don't agree with the mainstream media. I believe that this is a president that loves America. I believe that...
All right, hold tight. We're going to let John Milkovich finish, and then we'll get to financial analysts Andy Anderson and Fred Dent, both of whom are underwriters for WRKF, and we'll get their take on something that is as personal to people as their sex lives, their money. What's going on with the stock market in the age of Trump? Now the news with Karen Henderson on WRKF. This is Jim Engster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. In just a few minutes, we're going to hear from Andy Anderson and Fred Dent, two financial analysts, on the state of the stock market and the economy as a whole in the age of Donald Trump. In a few days, on the 20th day of this month, as in, what is that, Thursday? It'll be 1 year and one half year since Donald Trump took the oath of office in Washington, D.C. before record crowds on the mall. 877-217-5757. Brianna Cervantes asked Senator Milkovich, as we finish up with him, what makes you stay a Democrat, Senator, considering your conservative views and your support of the president? Why are you still a Democrat?
Well, you know, Jim, we were very clear, straightforward, and direct when we ran that we were running on Bible principles and the United States Constitution, not a political party platform. I may be in kind of an old school Democrat. I believe in a fair shake for working families. And listen, we all know that historically Democrats in our state were pro-life, pro-biblical, pro-family, pro-working family, really taking looking out for the middle class. So, you know, that's what I try to – that's the perspective I take as a legislator in the state. And certainly I just don't think it's my priority to vote party lines. I'm in Baton Rouge to try to do the right thing, and I'm just so really blessed to be representing a district of one of the strongest faith communities in America. People just have, you know, black, white, Republican, Democrat, Independent. They just have good, old-fashioned, old-school, traditional values, you know.
All right. We do have to roll, but, Senator, it is always good to talk with you. Thanks for joining us and taking all comers. It's good to hear your point of view, and obviously it's shared by many, and on abortion, shared by the governor of Louisiana, the Honorable John Bel Edwards. Thank you, Senator.
Jim, real privilege. Thank you for allowing me to be on your show.
Take care.
Thank you.
Lawyer from Shreveport, John Milkovich. Now we're joined by two men who've been involved in the financial game for several decades, both of them, Andy Anderson and Fred Dent. I think Andy's been around about a decade longer than Fred, but Fred, you're over 30 years, right?
Yes.
Yeah, and Andy's more than 40 years, the grizzled veteran that he is. And this Dow Jones Industrial Average, it's just over 25,000. When President Obama took office, it went down to 6,500 during the aftermath of the financial collapse under President Bush. And now it's rebounded nicely. And if President Trump, if he serves 8 years, follows the Obama tripling of the Dow, he'll leave office with the Dow at about 60,000. It's at 25,000 now, but that's down about 1,600 points from its high before the president went on this trade war path. Andy Anderson, what's this doing to the economy and to the stock market?
Oh, absolutely nothing. You know, we've got the NASDAQ at an all-time new high. Now, I've got a graph here I want you to notice, Jim, that I put in front of you. That is unemployment insurance claims, all right? And if we look at the employment numbers, we are seeing the most robust economy since 1953. We are in a bull market, and I think this market has got a long way to go. I think it's going to shock people as to how far it's going to go and how long it's going to go. We launched a year and a half ago. We launched a new bull market, and it's going to be a good thing to be involved in. And I recommend people get serious about it because they're going to wait until it's obvious, and then that's too late.
All right. What about the tariffs, Fred Dent? Andy Anderson says this amounts to absolutely nothing. I think that's an exact quote. Your thoughts?
Yeah, he says absolutely nothing. I say something different, and that is tariffs have a negative effect ultimately on the economy because what you're doing is constricting trade. You're constricting the flow of money. You're constricting the flow of goods and products and services both across borders and between players within an economy. And it also has another effect, and that is when you raise prices on things that we buy at the store, which tariffs do, that becomes inflation. So prices rise because of governmental artifice, not because of anything in the market system in competition, but because of fiat by government saying, we're just going to raise this price. And that really is a form of regressive tax, which goes back to those who are really at the margin in terms of buying everyday goods and services.
Don't misunderstand me. The NASDAQ is hitting an all-time new high here in the United States. The Shanghai Index in China is in a bear market. The bottom line for me is what the market's telling me is we're going to win this thing.
Can trade wars be won?
I don't think so. I think it's a lose-lose game. Everybody suffers, and we're already starting to see some of the fallout of that. I'm not speaking from a political viewpoint on this. I'm speaking from an economic viewpoint on this, and I just don't understand how people benefit when decisions
well,
like
and in Louisiana, there have been studies saying that this will impact our state more than any other state in the country because of the ports we have, and we've seen some of the soybeans, crops that we rely upon. What will this do to our state?
I don't think it's going to be helpful because we are a big exporter, and we rely on people from overseas to buy our stuff. And if that stuff costs more, it affects us. It's like anything else in the market.
You know, the big problem here is it's always going to be something. It's either going to be North Korea, it's going to be the tariffs, it's going to be interest rates going up. You know, if you get fixated on these issues, you end up really kind of missing out on investment opportunities. And I'd like to mention something about this because I really do believe we have entered a major bull market that we have not seen since the 1950s. Now, if you go back and study the market, and I went back to 1903, and you can see where there are basing periods in the market. Like 1926, we started a move. We peaked in 29. We did not get back above that 29 peak until 1950. Then we had a 16-year bull market, and people made a killing in the 50s, including my dad. My dad had Exxon all during that period. Then if you go to 66, which it was a 16-year bull market, we peaked in 66. Then we did not exceed that peak again until 82. And then we went from 1,000 on the Dow to, you know, 2,000. I think we were at 12,000.
Well, the Dow was at 3,400 when Clinton took office. It was over 10,000 when he left. And then it went down during the Bush years. 8 years it actually went down. So these things don't always move in an upward trajectory. Sometimes there is a, quote, correction, sometimes a big one, Andy. And we've had this big upturn during the Obama years. You're saying it's just going to keep on going.
What I'm saying is that I'm a behaviorist. I'm a big believer in studying human behavior, and the investor behavior. Most investors will not get involved in the stock market until it's topping and it's apparent. And that's the big mistake that people made back in 2000 was they jumped into the dot-coms at the absolute top and realized stocks like Amazon went from 100 down to $8 in that drop. So human behavior. What happens is you go through these extensive periods of time where people don't make any money in the market. So, but market tops are bubbles. Every market top I've ever studied, the top in 66 was the Nifty 50, that was a bubble. The 29 top, that was a bubble. The 2000 top, that was a bubble. Now, I'm not seeing anything like that right now. In fact, I'm seeing exactly the opposite. So what happens is the longer the base, the greater the race, is the saying on Wall Street.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this economy started going bad in 97. It did not pop out of that box that I'm showing you right here until 1.5 months, 1.5 years ago. Okay, so we're 16 months into a new bull market
right.
that could go let's, 10 to 20 years.
Well, let's get Fred's take. Andy is blue skies today for sure. Fred, I see you over there kind of absorbing his words. What do you think?
Well, Andy is enthusiastic about what he does, and I appreciate that. I've known Andy for a long time, and indeed he may be right. And with our clients, we take a little bit different approach, and that is we don't know where the market's going to go from the next wiggle. We could be due for a correction. It could double from here. It's really immaterial because instead we look back and begin with the planning perspective so that we develop kind of an all-weather approach.
But you're both into stocks.
Yes, well, for the long term, absolutely.
Well, you know, you could either operate from one or two areas. You can operate from fear or you can operate from greed. And I operate from greed. Because I think there's way too much fear out there.
What was it? Gordon Gekko said greed is good.
It is good.
And I would say both of the fear and greed are not the only two perspectives. There's a third way, and that's more of a balanced approach in life, taking into account that we'll have rainy days and sunny days, et cetera, and living your life in happiness rather than being in fear and in greed.
Well, do you credit the president, the current president, for this?
Absolutely not. And I don't credit Clinton. Hey, look, this is something you're going, Jim, you're going to have to get over. It's a cycle. There is a business cycle.
Presidents don't have anything to do with
absolutely
it.
Nothing.
Nothing. Now, absolutely nothing.
In other words, it's a waste of time.
Fred, does a president have any control over the economy?
Well, the president does have some marginal control over the economy, but I really think that to attribute major market moves and things like that to one person is
over
I'm
an 8-year period.
This.
For example, during the Bush years, I would think the war in Iraq had a lot to do with the downturn, and this was before the collapse of 2008.
Different markets behave differently under different presidents and different behaviors. I don't think you can form a strong correlation between who's in office and the way the markets behave.
Well, look, this difference between fear and greed is really important to understand because that's the only constant out there.
Mm-hmm.
Everything else is changing, but human behavior does not change. I was with someone Saturday, and he was a gentleman in his 60s, you know, and basically he has all of his money in certificates of deposit, making 2%. And I asked him, I said, you know, what's the – he said he's even afraid that the FDIC is going to fail. Look, we're not facing Armageddon. We are – I'm trying to say we're in the strongest economic conditions that we haven't seen since 1950. We are in a really good situation here. These are good – this is good news.
877-217-5757 and talk at talklouisiana.org. Andy Anderson and Fred Dent, both of whom are occasional underwriters on WRKF. They are here to assess what's going on in the economy and in the stock market. And the Dow Jones Industrial Average, as we speak, is down 1 point today, one whole point. So does that mean it's a bear market? Has it turned from the bull market that Andy Anderson says is the best since the 1950s? We'll talk about it and like to hear from you as well. And a question here about the Trump tax plan. What's that doing to the market? We'll get Andy and Fred to comment when we return after this brief pause on 89.3 WRKF. This is Talk Louisiana. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Becca Dill is producing, and our guests for another segment are Andy Anderson and Fred Dent, two accomplished and veteran financial analysts who have a track record that is successful. But let's face it, you could throw darts at a dartboard and pick stocks, and over the last 30 years, you're likely to have a profit, but sometimes there are bigger profits than others. And Andy Anderson is always in search of the new shiny object, the Apples, the Amazons. Fred Dent, are there any shiny objects out there right now?
Well, let's look at this. You just mentioned some of those stocks. Almost 100% of the gains in the S&P 500 this year have come from six stocks: Amazon, Netflix, Apple, Microsoft, Google, and Facebook. names that we all know. So the index is up about 5% this year. But smaller companies, small cap stocks are up 10%. Mid-sized companies are up 6%. And even those very tiny companies, those micro stocks, are up 13%. So there's a lot of opportunity all across the landscape.
Oh, we're seeing definite activity in the small caps. I think that's really an important message, Fred. The Russell 2000, which is a small cap index, has hit an all-time new high, along with the NASDAQ. The small caps and the growth stocks are leading this market. We have a growthy market, which is really important to understand.
All right. Amazon's up 16 in the early going today, now at 1828. Andy, you have been hot on that stock for some time. Are you continuing to be bullish on Amazon?
I'm having a tough time with it.
Really?
Yeah, it's getting too big.
So have you sold it?
Yeah.
You did?
Yeah, I did.
You sold Amazon?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
I had Netflix as well. I sold it as well.
877.
I've moved to the small caps.
217-5757 if you'd like to join
the
conversation.
We did real well in it. We did.
Yeah, okay.
We fooled with Amazon back in 97.
Well, what about the Trump tax plan? Is that going to stimulate growth in the markets?
It already has. I mean, let's look at what it is. I'm not so certain, and I said on this show before, that the average person benefits from the Trump tax plan. However, it's been beneficial to corporations. Those corporations have a lower tax rate, which means they have greater earnings, which means higher stock prices. But also, they also have the and there's a problem with that, by the way. They're not spending as much of those savings and taxes into R&D and expanding the economy. They're using it for share buybacks, and that's also propelling the stock market higher.
All right. A listener asks, as far as the quantity of stocks, since you're both into investing in the stock market, I would imagine you have more stocks in your portfolio than Andy does. Approximately how many, Fred?
Through the various funds that we use, hundreds of different companies.
And
we do
Andy,
not focus
on
specific.
Last time it was at thousands.
Maybe thousands.
And you have?
Right now I have seven.
Seven. And those are?
Well, I don't really want to mention the names because these are small cap companies. You know, basically what we're trying to do is exactly what Warren Buffett did. The reason I adopted this strategy was based on a book called The Buffett Way, which was Warren Buffett saying you should use focus investing.
Well, name one of the seven if you can.
I'll tell you one that's kind of – I got a couple of them that are kind of interesting. I have one called Teladoc, which is a software company. You know, you've got a lot going on with cloud computing. That's a big, big deal, you know, which is Amazon Web Services, Microsoft, so forth. But what Teladoc is virtual healthcare, where you can actually get on the Internet and have a discussion with a doctor face-to-face over the Internet. And I think that's an interesting concept.
All right.
Really do.
Bet the ranch, Andy says, on Teladoc.
Yeah, it's risky. It's risky.
Well, that's what you do. And of course, quite often the big profits are made when risks are taken, but there's also the prospect of a total collapse.
You know, I don't understand that. I've been doing it this way since 1995, and my portfolio since 95 is up 13-fold, okay? So I have never lost money in the stock market.
Never lost money?
Never have lost money.
Now, you've told me on the past.
Now, my portfolio's gone down, but I'm as of today, I'm doing great, you know, no problem.
But when the market had its rough patch in the bush,
I had a rough patch too.
Okay.
But let me say this. Look, stop losses are critical. If you make a mistake, and you're going to, there's no getting around it, I use approximately an 8% stop loss. So if I put 10% of my portfolio in something and I use an 8% stop loss, that is 0.8% of my total portfolio I just lost. Well, my average, I went back and studied my portfolio since 95. My average up day, now in a bull market, my average up day is about 0.8%.
All right.
So
here's
I can
another
make that
question
up in one day.
For Fred, and it probably applies to Andy as well. When the market's not going well, is it okay to short stocks? Is that a good idea?
I think shorting stocks is very, very risky, and we don't do it.
It's a trading strategy. It's not an investing strategy.
Well,
stocks rise 70%.
Some people make a lot of money shorting
stocks.
Look,
it depends on what kind of brain you got. If you're a pessimist and you want to do all that, but look, never short in a bull market, and we are in a bull market.
Never short in a bull market, but you sold Amazon, which has been it's been the stock that people have loved the most over the last year or so.
The math just doesn't.
When did you sell it?
About a couple months ago.
Yeah. And it's continued to go up?
We started fooling with Amazon in 97. We bought Amazon on a split-adjusted basis in 97. We paid $1 a share.
All right.
You know, it was 30, but it split. It went to 100. We made 100 times our money in the stock.
All right, Gustavo on Goodwood. Gustavo, you're on with Andy Anderson and Fred Dent.
Good morning. Just a quick comment. I believe one of your guests, I don't remember who said it first, but I believe both agreed in that the president did not have anything to do with the booming economy and the market specifically. Yet, just a second ago, he said that the tax cuts and the different things that President Trump had done did have an impact on the market. So I'm wondering, which one is it?
I think I was the one who said both of those. And I will say that in the short term, the tax cuts have helped businesses. In the long term, though, looking back, someone did a study once. That people assume around here that Republicans have been better over time for stock returns.
That's not true.
Well, that's what I'm going to say, is that indeed it's the Democrats, those that have appeared to be less friendly to the markets that have produced greater investment returns.
Yeah, the rich people made more money on your Clinton and
I'm neither,
Obama
by the way,
than any other presidents.
Let me disclaim, I'm neither Democrat nor Republican.
Right.
But I'm just.
But the president, the current one, Donald Trump, last week was quoted as saying the GDP has doubled in the 17 and a half months of his presidency. That's an impossibility. It just doesn't happen. But he said it. And people, a lot of times, as we know, about 40% of the country believes every word he says.
Res ipsa loquitur.
Look, there's a pendulum, and it swings, and it's called a business cycle. And if you happen to be president when the business cycle is swinging your way, of course you're going to take credit for it. That's what happened to Bill
Clinton. But it hasn't doubled, just like I was.
Now,
wait
a minute. The GDP growth rate
it has not doubled.
I don't know the latest numbers on GDP. I think that was about 4%.
When you talk about rates doubling, that's a different. He said the entire GDP had doubled. Yet that doesn't happen in 17 months.
Whatever.
Well, this president may benefit at the ballot box from the robust economy if it continues. Fred Dent, we do have the off-year elections, the midterm elections this year. How will the economy fare or be a factor in those?
Well, I think it's an interesting thing. I don't make political predictions because I don't follow it that closely in terms of the midterm elections. But I'm reminded of something Andy brought up about Warren Buffett earlier. One of the other things that Warren Buffett said was, it's not until the tide goes out that you get to see who's swimming naked. And when that happens, as we saw in 2007 and 2009, a lot of people were exposed. Well, as long as the economy is going well, it covers up a lot of nonsense politically. But when it starts to pull back, people will become a little bit more sensitive to what's going on politically.
But usually when the economy is going well, it's good for the sitting president.
Of course.
And Andy, it would seem that if your projections are right, then this president will benefit from the economy.
Now, I want to be clear. I'm not predicting anything, okay?
We were in the biggest bull market since 1952.
Let me throw this in. If the pattern, the human behavior pattern, repeats, we are going to be in as much as a possible 30-year bull market.
30 years.
Could be 30 years. If you go back to 1902 and you look at these basing patterns, and then you look, you see, bad markets are followed by good markets. Good markets are followed by bad markets. Okay, so if you get a bad market, that creates the inverse bubble I'm talking about. Okay, then you get the breakout, and usually the correlation is 1.5 to 1. So if you have a 6-year consolidation or sideways action, that means that you get a 9-year bull market.
All right, Jim on Bluebonnet. Hi, Jim. You're on with Andy and Fred.
Good morning, gentlemen. So I, especially to Fred, I have a question regarding a yield curve. What are your thoughts about the flattening yield curve and the possibilities of it being inverted and the history of that leading to a recession?
There's something called, coincidentally, the Fred spread, which comes from the Federal Reserve of St. Louis, where they publish
it. Not for Fred Dent.
No. but they do publish the yield curve. And what the caller is referring to is that sometimes you have shorter-term rates higher than the longer-term rates. And in this case of the Fred spread, it's the 2-year versus the 10-year. And we're starting to see that flattening, which could possibly be signaling a recession or a slowdown. What Andy said about a 30-year bull market, I will be willing to bet, Andy, that in the next 30 years, we will see a 20% pullback in the market.
Well, sure.
But that's not a bull market.
At some point. Not overall, though.
You're going to have consolidations and pullbacks. There's no if and. I don't know about 20%. But you're going to have pullbacks, no doubt about it. But I am saying if the pattern repeats, and I'm talking about a human behavior pattern, we could be in a really bull market that's going to last a lot longer than we're thinking.
All right. Well, thank you for both joining us today and for your support of WRKF. And we'll be back tomorrow, same time, same place. And, of course, we'll be talking about the Trump-Putin summit and much more. And hope you have a great day and continue listening throughout the day to 89.3 WRKF. For Becca Dill, I'm Jim Inkster. Thank you for listening and stay tuned.